And we want to thank you for making it possible, for being so really hip. Hipness is not a state of mind, it's a fact of life.
Now, what is hip? What is cool? Is there some kind of rule? Is it something that you share when you're alert and aware? Are there some words to say when the band begins to play? Can you dig it? Yeah, that's hip. What is hip? What is with it? It's not hard to find, but is it? Is it something that you earn? Or do you have to wait your turn? Is it sweet? Is it spice? Does it set the night off nice? Can you dig it? Yeah, that's hip. Say, the club is really jumping now. Band is really bumping now. Time to get a move on. Time to keep the groove on. If you get a little frantic, no need to panic. And who you take your tea with, that's who you want to be with. That's him. Don't dip. Don't flip. There's no need to slip. Watch the signs and you'll find out what is hip. Let it rip. Don't trip. Don't fall and spit your lip. Free your mind.
That's the Juju Orchestra with What is Hip, featuring Terry Collier. If you know who Terry Collier was, jazz musician, soul, folk music, writing his music, singing his music, and an all-around good guy. Died last year in October at the age of 67, but he had quite a body of work before he took off. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Tuesday, July the 9th. It is open forum. You know the rules. This is your chance to get on the soapbox and use your bullhorn to let us know what it is you're thinking. But, of course, be warned, you may be questioned quite closely, and you may be challenged. You may even do a bit of challenging yourself. Of course, there's so much news going around, but you are not confined to talking about the news. You can introduce an idea you think is truly worth considering. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Now, we just do have to have one little rule, and that is try and be focused. Give me one really good idea that you need to talk about, just one, and stay on point so that the traffic cop wouldn't give you a ticket today. How about that? 888-874-4888. And while you get that ready, let me ask you again. We're doing very well. I understand a lot of people are calling to reinforce the point that these children in Haiti really do need to be rescued. They are dying now like crazy because the conditions since the earthquake 3 years ago simply have not improved much. There is a family reunification program that was approved some 3 years ago, of course, when the earthquake hit. The path was clear. Everything is fine. There was no expense. It's not going to cost the government any money. It's just that the relatives want their children here with them, and the children deserve to be reunited with their families, especially at this time when things are so desperate in Haiti. There is a Congresswoman, Frederica Wilson, who is the representative for the largest constituency in the United States of Haitians, And she is quite influential, we're told, with the president. She needs to be encouraged to make that call to the president. So kindly and politely call her and let her know that you're concerned about the Haitian family reunification program, that it should start now. There's no need for any further delay. Her office's number is 202-225-4506. Just a phone call will do a great deal of good. It means that people are paying attention and are concerned, and this is one good way to get her moving in the right direction. The number again is 202-225-4506. At the risk of influencing where the show is going today, I'm not going to introduce a topic. I'm going to let you do that. The heavy lifting is on you, and you will tell us what it is you want to talk about and why you want to talk about it, and what are the points that you're going to make. And, you know, this is very, very important work, because inevitably people will be disagreeing with a position one way or the other that you would have from time to time. And it's good to get the practice of appreciating another point of view. It doesn't mean that you're wrong or the other person is wrong. It's just that you have a different point of view. And you can, you know, present your position, and if the other person regards you with any degree of respect, they will do the same and present their opinion. And, you know, you're free to take it, or you're free to leave it. We've had this trouble as a community of people who are politically seasoned, that we also have a very low tolerance level for differences of opinion. And yet it is in the difference of opinion that you find incredible education, because when you ask somebody to explain what the flip side of the coin would be, a side of the coin that you may not be inclined yourself to flip over and look at, it is education. And you'd be surprised how effective it is and how necessary it is, this exchange of information, opinions, and ideas. This is work that we need to do. I find that, you know, it's good to have an opinion. It really is important that you form an opinion. It's also important that you keep a mind open for other ideas to flow through it, because that is what education is all about. We discussed education here, didn't we? A meaning out of, and ducere to lead. The idea is that we are led out of a state of not knowing and into a state of knowing, very often by just talking and exchanging points of view. So 888-874-4888. Who will take the first shot? People always hesitate. They want to see who's going to be first. And then they say, okay, well, all right. I think the water's fine. I think I'll jump in. But it's a little hesitation. And you say, well, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be first today. Maybe I should be about 10th. By then, you know, people will just be ready to just receive whatever it is I have to say. Come on, you're braver than that. You're braver than that. I'm going to resist the urge, really, to say anything, lest it be the place from which, you know, we begin to discuss things. All right, we have quite a few people already. We have Harvey from Berkeley. Hello, Harvey. How are you doing today?
Very good. And how are you today?
Fine, thank you.
You sound great. Well, I'd like to talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And
okay.
Did you know about that?
Yes.
Okay. One of the things that the Trans-Pacific Partnership will do, it'll level all local environmental laws. And right now in Portland, Oregon, they want to put in a coal port. And they want to bring in millions of tons of coal through there, and it'll be shipped to China. And I found this article this morning, and it says here that coal pollution in China is cutting life expectancy by 5.5 years, and that the study conducted that nearly 500 million people living north of the Huayou River in China will lose an estimated 2.5 billion life years because of pollution from widespread coal burning. And you know, we're going over 400 parts per million of carbon in the air, and this is the wrong way to go. We're killing people, we're shortening their lives, and all the illnesses that are associated with this. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership will try, these are the corporations, the worldwide corporations, they're trying to sort of level all local communities, environmental laws, everything, so that they can have their way. And I say that we have to stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership because it'll pollute America. It'll kill our Chinese brothers and sisters way before their time. And the foul air that they have to breathe, I believe that clean air is a birthright. And I believe that everyone is entitled to it, and we shouldn't have to compete with cars and fire plants to have oxygen to breathe. So I'm calling.
But Harvey, if I may ask you, what is the? Would you please define so others listening would be able to know what the Trans-Pacific Partnership is?
To my knowledge, it's a collection of corporations who are trying to pass this. This is, they call it NAFTA on steroids. For instance, they can buy, once the Trans-Pacific Partnership is, say you have a local water plant that's owned by your community. Well, they can override that, and they can, in a sense, file to own it, so put it under private ownership. It's about putting everything under private ownership. It's about the end of the commons, and everything is for sale, and to the corporate world. And I feel that this is all wrong. It's there.
But I don't know whether you have a good definition of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And you're right when you said it's like NAFTA on steroids, because it actually is a trade arrangement among nations in the Pacific Rim. And basically, it is the flip side of NAFTA. You know, it's a hemispheric trade agreement among several nations in the Pacific. You're correct about, because I read the article myself today too, about the program that China had of distributing free coal because of, as a way of a pacification, essentially, because many people could not afford fuel, so the reserves of coal were being used as a way to, you know, provide people with fuel. But the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which, of course, you remember that, I don't know if you remembered Hillary Clinton going in the region to participate in TPP talks. And, you know, I think we need to take a closer look at it, because I don't think we understand it, except that it is very much a trade agreement, which means it has pretty much the same holes as NAFTA would have and same concerns, especially with nations that dominate the hemisphere or dominate the region. And we're talking now about China, of course, China and Japan. But they're not the only ones. We also have Western nations involved in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, like Canada, North America, essentially. And they are taking advantage of leverage they think they have in terms of trade. So it's a very complicated thing. I myself have been reading on it, but I'm not so sure that I have a perfect handle on it. But you put the idea out there, and let's see what people talk about in reaction to it. Thank you so much, Harvey, for getting us started today.
Thank you, Judy.
Thank you. Donald from Georgia.
Yeah. How are you, Judy? How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. Look, I hate to get off the subject. I want to talk about something.
There's no subject. The subject is as you say it is today.
Okay, I've been thinking about this for quite a while. I'm concerned about the black political class. I think Barack Obama exposed the weaknesses in black America. I think his presidency, we're more inclined to look at people in leadership as like a Hollywood-type figure, instead of looking at their actions, looking at the policies, and holding them accountable. We say, well, you know, he's all right, this, that, and other. And it's not just Barack Obama. It's the black political class, period. It's the Congress. It's, you know, the local elected officials. If we like you personally, we'll let you slide on certain things. really on anything. Like, for example, here in Georgia, John Lewis been a congressman forever, and he has had very few, if any, challenges. And I haven't seen nothing that he's done. I've written to him and asked for certain things, and I get the same old standing line. We've got your complaint. We're looking into it, but nothing's ever done. And I think as a people, we will have to get past that if we're ever to be taken seriously by anybody. The Democrats.
Now, how do you get past it?
Well, first of all, we're going to have to run somebody against them. I guess just not vote for them. Vote for third party, anything. Write your own name in. Hold a protest. We're going to have to do something to show our dissatisfaction, but we're going to have something behind that to back it up, to let them know that we're not playing.
They know we are playing because we are playing. Let's be very serious about it. That's the fact. The community is playing because, considering the number of crises at all these different levels that are taking, you know, the toll on the community as a whole, one wonders what would it really take to wake folks up to the fact that there's got to be a political alternative, and they better get serious about crafting one.
Well, I hate to say it, Eutrice, but it seems like it's going to have to take a serious crisis, where people are actually hurting.
So, I mean, we haven't gotten there yet, you don't think?
No, it doesn't hurt enough people.
Okay.
You know, it's hurting, for example, in among our people. There's, and I know you know, there's what you call a class division.
Mm-hmm.
And it always shows the ones at the bottom always feel like, well, I got some kind of hope, you know. And the ones at the top is like, well, it's not hurting me, you know. So there's going to have to be a tragedy. Something's going to have to drop out of the bottom and hurt everybody. Enough. To make us come to realization, say, hey, something's got to be done.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Donald. Thank you for contributing.
Yes, ma'am.
Sarah from Dallas, you're on the air.
Greetings to you, Eutrice. Am I being heard?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. Well, greetings to you, Eutrice, and greetings to the PRN audience. Your caller that just got offline from my former home state, he hit something on that I was going to mention also, Eutrice, on this open forum, and that is the class division between the black political classes as well as the lower echelon. And I do agree with him because former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, she will be coming to the Dallas area on tomorrow, and I plan on meeting with her to get my book signed as well as to do an open discussion, because we really and truly don't have any proper representation, or the representation that we do have, they get bought out, they get caught up in the celebrityism of being in political office, and they start believing their own hype. And when I was living in Georgia, Cynthia McKinney, I was living in the 4th Congressional District, which was represented by Cynthia McKinney. We moved just before her office was taken over by Hank Johnson, that is in it right now, and then I was following up that they have another person that they're potentially running against Hank Johnson. But as the caller said, in the state of Georgia, which I'm going to use as an example since I'm familiar with that, is we like to have certain dynastic families that we feel, because of their linkage to the civil rights movement, and we look at them as being so-called elites. And we want to put them in office, and it doesn't matter what they do, we hold them up and we prop them up and we run along with them, just like we have the Jackson family in Chicago, and everyone look at them as, to, you know, being a dynasty out that way. And in Georgia, we have, for instance, we have like John Lewis, we have Andy Young, and of course we have Ralph Abernathy, his son, who was on the city council, and he got himself, as well as Julian Bond's son, who was also of Atlanta City Council. And we are not having any fresh voices. This situation that happened with the Voting Rights Act, as well as what has happened to affirmative action, because we don't have affirmative action anymore. We're operating on a diversity program right now in the country. It all happened under these people's watch that was put in there who have no political skills. We pushed them along because we figure they were the face in the civil rights movement. They were close to Dr. King, and therefore, by osmosis, they have some of Dr. King rubbed off on them, and therefore, we're going to push them along, and they're going to have our agenda. These people have not a clue.
But what you are saying and what Donald was saying, I have a different twist on it. It is not so much changing the people. You have to have a system of delivery. And this has been my biggest problem. People don't understand the necessity to construct a completely alternative system.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, even if you work to get a nice complement of fresh faces, they're still part of an old, rotten system. So
exactly.
You have to construct a party. You have to construct some kind of mechanism that delivers your vote to Congress or to the city council or to whatever it is, whatever level of government that you wish. It delivers the power through an alternative system that they have no control over. And that's the one thing folks will not do. They do not see the need to organize. I keep talking about the fact that on Labor Day, there are more than 2 million people on Eastern Parkway having a good time, jumping up, and, you know. No one is doing any organizing on the most populous at the most populous national festival there is. We don't see
exactly.
people getting involved, you know. So the hard work is in constructing a healthy alternative and stop thinking it's about electing people. It may just be a transitional thing to do to elect somebody in the short term, but the construction of an alternative political system is absolutely necessary, and that's the work. Folks don't want to do it.
I agree with you, Yatrice. We need to run a parallel organization that is opposite to the current system that is in place, because we've already been in this system. We know that this system is not going to work to our benefit, but we still keep throwing things. We keep throwing fresh meat into this grinder, hoping that a different result will come out and we'll not get the same sausage. And we are not. We are that, as well as we sit back, we put people into office, and we sit back on our hands until the next election cycle. We don't push them. We don't ask them for anything. And then we just know what the result is going to be. And then, you know, we go through this whole thing over and over again of, well, they're not doing anything. But what did we do? Did we
The point of it, we just need to get off our butts and start working. That's what I say. Thanks, Sarah, for calling.
You're welcome.
Our little chat. Thank you. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Good afternoon to you.
Well, I'd like to continue the vein that we're on right now, because as quiet as it's been kept, we now have the election of Chukwe Lumumba in Birmingham, Alabama.
Correct.
And I think he is going to be a model. Now, again, it's been kept very, very quiet. He was able to garner the votes of his constituents in Birmingham. And I think this should be a lesson for those of us who are in New York with the mayoral elections coming up this fall. We do not yet have a candidate present who is going to represent our interests. But clearly the numbers, just the sheer numbers of black and brown people in New York, should be able to dictate the outcome of this election. And so what I am doing is just spreading the message about what has happened in Birmingham, and to make certain that we can replicate that here in New York this fall.
Good idea. Thank you so much
Thank
for
you.
Calling. Thank you. Orville, you're on the air.
Peace, lead.
Thank you.
Thank you for the program.
Thank you.
There's so much to say.
Pick one.
I understand.
It's one for poison, as they say.
And I operate within parameters, and I do that very well. And I think that's also a part of the issue, is that there are people who would like to be involved, and they know their positions or their ability to play different positions, including the young. And when they look around, there's really nothing to join that they could see. And people are not stupid, and they do not want to expend their time involved with all these people and their big egos. But anyway, that's something else. I don't want to get off point. In terms of Zimbabwe, I think that might be a perfect way to look at how someone or a group assesses a situation and then handles it, because then we might all learn something.
Why are you pointing to Zimbabwe, and what is the teaching point with respect to Zimbabwe? How do we benefit from Zimbabwe's political system?
Well, I think a brief synopsis is that they were wronged by a group of people who were running their country and did not have the numbers in terms of voting. And these folk would not do the right thing, and what they ended up having was a revolution. The natives, indigenous to the place, the rightful owners of the land, decided to take it back. And they did so rather forcefully. But before doing so, they went through a lawful process recognized by international courts. And there was an agreement. The agreement was not honored. And they waited for it patiently, and then the leader waited too long, it seems, and the people said, look, you know, either get out and let somebody else do it, or do it. And so they just did it themselves, and he didn't stop them. I'm talking about Zimbabwe, I'm talking about Robert Mugabe, and I'm giving maybe a kind of messy synopsis. The people went out, took the land, and he didn't stop them.
Well, actually, he encouraged them because his troops were among the people providing security. I mean, this is a really interesting story about Zimbabwe.
I understand where you're going. Please, can I just move on real quick? I'm trying to go quickly.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So in terms of the international system, which you can actually use the different systems that are attacking the country and attacking Mugabe and his political party as a way of assessing what's actually going on in almost any city, any place in the world in terms of where you have oppression, including right here in New York City. And so they were boycotted. They were slandered through media throughout the world, and people had a very bad opinion, and the boycott hurt very much. And the land that they had, they could not import the that they recently rescued. They could not import or get the right tools, all kinds of things because of the boycott. They could not even treat their sewage, certain things like that that were just denied them and caused some problems in terms of health. But eventually they bottomed out, and they are actually producing food on their lands. Many people in the world, even a certain body that says who in the world, what countries are doing well, have given Zimbabwe a thumbs up. So maybe I went too brief in an overview. Maybe you can help me, or is there something? I think we see a picture there, a model that we might be able to use. In terms of looking at the two different parties that were vying for power, there are probably more that I don't know about, the two different parties, how international a game was played and is still being played. You had NGOs, so you might have these different organizations within our community who are not really doing anything. And if you're not really doing anything positive, I mean, then you're a part of the problem. Whether you're consciously there to sabotage or whatever, these organizations, these 501c3s, you know, these churches, these money-taking charities, they're not doing anything. Even if they're not knowingly there to sabotage the communities, since they're pulling in all these monies and not really giving any good services, and in some case actually annoying the community on many different levels, you know, their immune systems. Maybe we can begin to look.
I don't know that I would agree that Zimbabwe is a good model. It's a good model to study how a good thing, a potentially good thing, could go so bad.
Could go so bad?
Could go so wrong, absolutely.
And what do you mean by it's going so bad presently?
I mean that leadership. And this is a problem. Leadership is seldom open to disagreement. And there is a dictatorial style that Mugabe has and has had for a long time.
Is this a fact or conjecture on your part? Please, I would like to know that.
No. It's a fact.
And how do you get this to be a fact?
Well, you take a look at what's going on in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe used to be the breadbasket of Africa, practically. It was quite fertile. It had great land and so forth. But it also was a colony of the British. It was, in fact, Rhodesia,
yes.
Named after Mr. Rhodes,
yes,
who decided he deserved a country all by himself.
Oh, definitely.
So you had a natural desire by the people to essentially take control of their land. And that was the sentiment sweeping through not just Africa, but the entire black world.
Yep.
You would recall that at the same time, same movements were going on in Central and South America and the Caribbean. So it was widespread. Once Mugabe came into power, and you have to understand that in just about almost every single case.
What do you mean by, I always find that interesting when someone tells me I have to understand. What was that in reference to?
I'm about to state what it is.
I have to understand.
I haven't stated it yet.
No, but you see, what I'm saying is certain. Please excuse me. I don't mean to be rude. It's just that we're interacting and maybe we don't understand our affinity for our styles. When someone says something like, I have to understand something, usually things I go, why? What do you mean I,
All right. Well, I will not use the word have to, the words have to. I suggest that you consider strongly that the situation in Zimbabwe is very complex.
Very complex.
Extremely complex.
Like anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. It's like and unlike anywhere else as well, because there are certain dynamics at play in Zimbabwe that are unique to Zimbabwe, though they resemble the same kind of a political progression that you would see in other countries.
Yes, but I think
we do have
a
situation.
I think we're getting lost, and I
haven't
quickly
yet made my point.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
About it is, when you look at a model, you also have to look at what the negatives are, and there are quite a few with respect to Zimbabwe.
You know, this is where you and I, this is where we have such a pulling, because I don't seem to if I'm giving a point, if I'm producing a point, and you're there as a moderator in terms or air trafficker, this is my point. So if you let me finish this because this might be a key for. If this is just mine, maybe you can ask me questions.
No, but you asked me
why I believe such and such is so and so, just to see if I might have a handle on it, or it might just be a path we can just walk down to see.
No, I'm suggesting.
But here you are. You're telling me stuff now.
Oh boy, I am reacting to what you said. I'm not telling you anything. I'm reacting to what you're saying. I was under the impression we were having a conversation.
No, I was trying to set a certain model, to look at models and see how focused now we can look at certain things that are happening other places and do it here, whether it be our mayorship, whether it be our local organizations, whatever it is.
I got that.
Yes.
But because you lifted Zimbabwe up
as a model,
it was my cautionary note that Zimbabwe may not necessarily be a good model.
And you see, that's where the issue was. Personally, I think that's where it was when I could have. I think that it would have been very instructive of you to just to say, well, what do you mean by that? Or and just to keep going along the lines instead of now constant just coming right up and saying, I don't believe it's a good example. You see, because then again, that kind of like it doesn't open it to other places. It's just saying, I don't believe it's a good example. Instead of saying, let's move down the road.
There's a definitive difference between hearing and listening. Listening is a cognitive process.
Yes,
you really have to listen to, not hear, but listen.
Yes, very much so.
And that's what we're supposed to do. You advanced an idea, and you lifted up Zimbabwe as a model, even as you admitted that you don't know very much about whether it is a good model, whether it is a good model.
Oh, I never admitted that at all.
So yes, you
well, if I did, I rescind that immediately.
We're not going to get into an argument.
So let me just rescind that. We don't need to go further with that. I'm saying if I did, I made a mistake.
This is the thing. Mm-hmm. You advanced a model as an idea that of you advanced Zimbabwe, I should say, as an idea of a model.
Yes,
and
I did. I put it out there.
You also admitted that you don't even know whether it is a good model or not.
Again, I just said to you, if I did so, and I don't believe I did so, I strongly disagree with your thinking. Let's move past that. I agree it's a good model, and I would like to move ahead.
But we're getting into polemics. Here's the thing. I'm still reacting to your point.
I would hope so, because that's what I called in for, and I would like to get further than this.
All right. Let me know when you're ready to have a conversation.
Yes, I keep trying my best.
Are you ready?
I'm ready right now.
Okay, good. My point simply was that there is a lot to understand about Zimbabwe that can't be explained in 5 minutes. But there's a lot to understand about Zimbabwe that would cause one to reconsider a position that it is a good model.
Let's flesh out.
My
goodness, let's flesh out what I said. You didn't give me a chance to flesh anything out. All you immediately said it was not a good model.
You start off on I-95, and then you take us on 278, and then you take us on Route 17, and then you take us on a gravel road, and then a dirt road, and you come back to the side street.
But as soon as you say someone is presenting an idea, and you say, I don't think it's a good idea, you haven't allowed the person to flesh it out.
You don't even
know if it's a good idea or not.
But you had ample time to make your point.
With me, it seems to be a place where you get to, you want to just tell me no.
All right, I'll tell you
And
what.
It's happened before.
All right,
to tell me about a preacher that you experienced and how the man had slaves or whatever, or people. I couldn't believe it that you would have
this is what I get. You're reacting to the fact that there was a disagreement with something that you held up as an ideal. And,
I'm moving the process along by just blocking it and telling me that you don't think it's a good model. Instead of inquiring why I think it's a good model, you immediately said to me, it's not a good model.
But I didn't have to ask you because you went on and explained why.
You thought it was good because they took the land and they're producing food.
And you pointed out all the things that supported your thesis that it was a good model. You made a very pointed presentation with regard to that. And it was on the basis of that
that
I questioned whether it was a good model. All right, so let's just say we have a difference of opinion today.
No, it's not a difference. All I'm asking is, please, if I present an idea, don't just tell me it's not a good idea.
But here's the thing.
I ask you, please don't do that to me.
Here's the point. We're all grown people.
Yes, we're all grown,
and that's what I'm saying to you.
It's not a good idea.
But you have to understand.
Further.
You won't give people a chance to talk.
No, not
to
people,
talk.
You. I give people many. You.
I don't argue. I generally don't.
No, it's not about arguing, but I'm talking about the words. I'm listening to your words. You say, I don't give people. What do you mean, I don't give people? You don't know me that well.
I will have to retreat.
I'm looking for more when I call, and I really am.
I'm delighted that still remains your sentiment. I'm very proud of that.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks so much. All right. Let's see who we have. We have Dave from New York.
Hi, Trees.
Hello.
You recovered sufficiently. I also want to disagree with something that you brought up in the past. Anyway, okay. I read that article that you had introduced yesterday about Snowden.
Yes.
Mr. Snowden, mm-hmm. by Joe Mullen about, his the chat logs of him 4 years ago.
Yes.
And so in the very last, there were three pages, and the last of those three pages went into Joe Mullen's attempt to explain the transformation that we apparently see in him, which you seem to be expressing you were extremely mistrustful of. Joe Mullen seems to think that these are my words, that there was a kind of a cognitive dissonance between his libertarian leanings and his support, his quote, his words, or Joe Mullen's words, support for the national security, for the security state, sorry. And so he seemed to be explaining that it was that cognitive differences that caused the change in Snowden. And I have some sympathy for that view, because I think those sorts of changes in people are, and I know you gave this some, you said you didn't want to discount this, but in effect you sort of did, that those changes are very possible. And in fact, those are some of the most liberating moments in a person's life, when they realize they're wrong about something and they now change their view. That can be just a completely liberating moment. I speak from some experience, that's not a matter. But anyway, so you also drew not a parallel, but you drew a contrast between, on another occasion, you had drawn contrast between Manning and Snowden, and between Daniel Ellsberg and Snowden. And I think that in Manning's case, Manning would have preferred not to face trial. I think he did not want to be known. He would rather have stayed anonymous. I think that's what the news seems to have been conveying. And in Ellsberg's case, you had said that Ellsberg had a history of activism, and this is from what I could find out, because it didn't sound right to me. That's not the case. Ellsberg was a complete insider. He was in the elite circles, and he had top secret. He had access to top secret information, much more top secret than Manning or Snowden. And he, his own words, had an epiphany. So I don't see that this epiphany is at all far-fetched. Now, the other thing is that I don't think it's that Snowden's – I don't think it's the most important thing to try and focus on Snowden, the person, the personality, you know, get into his psyche. I don't think what's really important is the information that he is conveying. Is it correct or not? And the United States government has not denied it. In fact, they've admitted it. So so the core of what he was conveying is true. It's there. It's so I think this psychoanalyzing of Snowden is a side issue, and it's not the most important thing. He may have this personality trait, that, but it doesn't really matter, as long as the information he's conveying is true. Now,
well, that is exactly, by the way, the point I'm making, that we arrive at that conclusion way too soon. Because in saying that very thing that you've just said, what you have prepared yourself to do and what you are rationalizing is an automatic belief that the guy is, quote, right, unquote, or no reason to suspect anything about Snowden.
I was going to go to that very issue before you cut in. Okay. But you can go ahead and.
I gave you enough time to lay the chunk of what it is. Are you done, or you want more time to do that?
I would like just to make one last point. Yeah.
Go right ahead. Okay. But make it quickly if you can, because we have people waiting.
If there is something funny about Snowden, and I don't discount the possibility, if there is something, I would put it in this. I would speculate that this is what it is. It's in George Orwell's 1984. The security state was a known fact. Big Brother is watching you was the slogan, and so everybody in society knew that Big Brother is watching them, and the United States could not. If that's what the United States is aspiring to, and there's probably good reasons to think that it is, then they would not be able to just put it in that blunt a way. They would have to cloak it in a lot of high-minded sounding rhetoric. And in that sense, if there's something funny about Snowden, I would project that it is that he has been chosen as the vehicle, whether knowingly or unknowingly, the vehicle to let the people of the United States know that they're being watched. And so that's the vehicle. So that was my last point.
Okay. Let me react to your last point first. And it requires a historical perspective. The historical perspective is what is apparently just freaking people out is something that the black community has known and has been accustomed to and has adjusted to for a long, long time.
And
the problem has been affecting black folks for a long time. Its leaders have been either killed, assassinated. The black community has been one of the most watched and most observed and most spied on communities. There are more informants attached to people in the black community wanting to know what it is they're thinking, what they're going to do. I even referenced the fact that many of the organizations that were formed ostensibly to assist black people were in fact the epicenter of spying. So what is different here is not that the government is spying. That's remained remarkably consistent. The one thing that this revelation has brought to the attention of people is how vast it is. And the reason for its vastness is that the technology has enabled government to have an unabated appetite, an absolutely unsatisfiable appetite. It can now, through technology, do what it has been doing and getting away with in the black community for centuries.
I agree with that.
But that's the point. My point is, when whites, this goes to the racial issue in America, the dichotomy, when an issue begins to be affecting, or people see it as affecting whites, it now becomes an issue. When blacks are screaming and telling you this is what's happening, do help us do something about it. Help us fight the government on it. People say, no, well, it doesn't affect me. But there is nothing that has been charged so far except for the volume of spying and the technology of spying. But in every technological age, the United States government has used whatever technology has been available, whether it is in the form of sending people personally to go spy or tapping when they finally got airwaves and they were able to tap into the airwaves. And now the technology has delivered the internet and other ways of communicating, so that government simply has diversified its methods. That's my view.
I
say
that.
It from the historical perspective that oppressed people, Latinos could tell you the same story. African Americans, Native Americans, I mean, you can refer to any group of oppressed people and they will tell you, we've been talking about this for decades. Nobody is listening. Just like we said, the Central Park case, the guys are innocent. Nobody's paying attention. Now comes Ken Burns, and now it's official. So we're tired of that dichotomy. So I'm pointing that out to say, as alarming as it is to some people, because there has been this dichotomy that allowed them to basically isolate themselves and insulate themselves against popular oppression. Popular meaning more people, not because it, people like it, but because even the left, white left, turned away when all these things were being brought to the attention of every single leader we could name. We could name dozens of them. We could name all kinds of obscene programs. Remember when it was said that the U.S. government was flooding Los Angeles with guns and drugs? Everybody said, what a nonsensical thing. Where did they come up with these things? That's my first point.
That was one of my revelations, by the way, when I first heard that.
So whenever these problems occur, I immediately go back to my historical reference guide. And it then makes sense to me that the problem now becomes a problem because now there are white people concerned about their privacy. Black people have been concerned about their privacy for a long time. I mean, we've adjusted to the idea that we don't have any. We get it. Secondly is the issue of, I'm not comparing people necessarily, because, you know, I don't know what's in his mind. I know that I'm a journalist, almost 40 years now, and I have a sense that this is not smelling right, because a number of things are not, they're working kind of out of sync. You have a guy who doesn't want to be called a spy, even though he said that's what he did. And what I'm cautioning about to the left of center people is this: be very careful, even about people like this. Don't jump to conclusions that they're there for you. How did this happen at this time? Why did this happen at this time? And I postulated the theory. They were on to him. He was about to get caught. And so he decided to take a preemptive action and really go freak out with this thing. And then people, of course, hearing it will necessarily respond accordingly, because it does sound very apocalyptic, very Big Brother. But again, it depends on who you're talking to. You talk to the average black person, it's going, oh, man, I mean, we've been there and did that. So that it doesn't seize me the way it seizes some other folks. Secondly, I think there are questions that need to be answered. And simply because he presents himself, and when you hear him talk and you hear Assange talk, you hear the same thing about this exportation of ego. The world is as I see it, and an understanding that they have accrued a certain amount of power. Let me put something to you.
What are the questions that need to be answered?
Let me. Is this guy to be taken for just who he says he is, just like that?
Well, I agree he may not be, and I postulated my own theory. But what's important? What's important, it seems to me, is as you said, the scope of this surveillance. And
but I'm saying that the contradiction is right there, and the community would not deal with the contradiction. Is right, you just said it.
Well, yes, but
because of the scope,
people have always reacted to what affects them
personally. Almost
out
of time, but. Yes, but you're reacting because you see yourself at last as a possible member of the affected class. So you have a vested interest now.
Correct.
Okay, there you go. That's the point I'm making.
Well,
that's the point I'm making. And the left has got to deal with it, because that is a manifestation of race privilege right there. These problems are routinely ignored. Until they decide that a problem immediately or potentially affects them, only is it then a legitimate issue. And there are people who are tired of that. I've gone through these circles before, because a lot of folks get worked up and they go, geez, you know, here you go again. I mean, all these years, decade after decade after decade of evidence of all these wrongs that are committed, and, you know, it doesn't involve me, so I'm not moved to involve myself. It involves some other people, and they're, you know, they're not really at the nexus of power. But now I see myself as a potential victim, and damn it, it's a problem now. Do you agree with that or not? Praise God. Well, we are out of time. It's 1:59, and I want to thank you. That's the issue. Don't get it twisted. That's my issue right there. Plus other questions that need to be asked of him, just the same. So we come back to each other tomorrow, God willing, and the creek don't rise. Have a good day, and thanks so much for being with us.